I am unashamed. What about you?
All right, welcome back to Unashamed. We're super excited today. We have double Robertsons on. Well, we have quad Robertsons.
Quads.
That's right. I got to thinking about this. This is super exciting. I think for the first time ever, we have oldest sons with their dads on the set of Unashamed. I think it's a first.
Wow, that is a... I don't know. I'm normally not here, so I didn't know that.
We got Willie. We got John Luke. We got me. We got Dad. We got the professor. That's what Willie calls Zach.
That's Willie called me.
Yeah.
What's the glasses? Is that why you called me that?
Yeah, something.
The when books you're in front of a bookshelf,
So three generations. Yeah. Three generations.
Three generations are here. That's exactly right, Dad. The legacy lives on.
Man.
It's pretty exciting. So we're missing Jace, and Willie, we put you in his chair.
Yeah, I asked him what advice would he give me, and he said, see how long you can talk without taking a breath. So I think his record's 38 minutes, so I'm going to see if I can. The first time I was a guest on this podcast, I literally did not comment until minute 48, which made me think, why am I here? Like, you just called me down here to sit in a chair and listen. So I didn't know if it was like,
well, I mean,
if it was for me, like it was some
unashamed.
Well, maybe that's why his T-shirt, if you read him on the front, is, well, what is that?
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But Jay says, but Dad says on the back, it says, I'm probably not.
But if he ever got wrong, he was not leaving you the position to maybe get him on the right track.
No. Well, good. I've got a lot to get off my chest. Now I can actually have time to get it off my chest.
John Luke, welcome to Unashamed.
Thank you.
It's good to have you on here. Pull that mic a little closer to you. There you go. Because we do want to hear what you have to say today. So, yeah, Jace is – so number one complaint on Unashamed from Unashamed Nation is that Jace talks too much. Are you shocked by that?
Well, I learned that as soon as I could start – hearing voices, I knew one of them was talking a lot, and it was Jace for sure.
I wish I could, if I could magically not burden our crack staff of Unashamed, I would love to take clips with it, especially the ones that, because just in my mind, I could take and just show them to you about our childhood, the stories he tells, because. And maybe I just wasn't aware, like, because so much of it, I don't even believe it's true, but he's so passionate when he tells them, like, it's like, well, I guess there must be a nugget.
I'm sitting here, his dad, thinking, where in the world he come up with that? That was going on?
I mean, I know, I'm the same way. I'm like, what? I mean, he tells about mom ruining Christmas and just all these stories are just like, I just can't
I hate to say, but it's like none of those are true.
I know they're not.
So but it's like we're watching the making of Uncle Si, maybe. Like, this is like the prequel to Si. Like, this is how it started. He just starts making up stuff. And, oh, there's oftentimes I'm like, Jace, that's not how that happened.
Well, I mean, I listen and I think, what? Because he's talks about, he was just telling a story recently about mom telling him, there was no Santa, and then that Christmas was canceled, you know, and so he's telling all this stuff, and he was devastated, and I'm laughing the whole time, because I'm just it just tickles me to no end that right. This would even happen, which I know it didn't, but then it makes me laugh because he's just so serious about it.
Every year there is proof. There is a Christmas tree coming in that living room. It's coming in there.
Well, she loves Christmas. I'm like, I don't
even believe
it. Does
she love it?
But I know it's not true because mom probably believed in Santa even after she had us. Like, she probably never knew. She never got the cable that it wasn't true.
Well, then he said, you know, and all I wanted this year was all this Miami Dolphins stuff. And I was like, Miami Dolphins? I was like, I don't ever remember you liking the Miami Dolphins. Do you ever remember going through a Miami Dolphin phase?
Actually, I've got to take – there was a year.
Really?
When – but actually, I thought I got the Miami Dolphins. But there was – I remember there was Dallas Cowboys stuff and Miami Dolphin. I'm sure it was some sort
of closeout
clearance that, hey, you know, Santa got, you know, a good deal on some stuff.
And Howard Brothers.
But I do remember a Miami
Dolphin. Well, he told that was the year that she was trying to make it up because she has canceled Christmas. I mean, it was all, it was very twisted, the whole story about it. But then so then he made me feel guilty because then Missy was like, well, why was Al laughing the whole time? There's nothing funny about that, about ruining the time.
Which is funny.
It was funny. That made me laugh more because she's like, why did Al think it was funny? Your Christmas would be ruined. And I was like, well, I don't know. It was just funny the way you were telling the story.
Because it's not true.
Because I was like,
Mom never canceled Christmas.
No, that's what I said.
Oh, my.
But so I'm glad I got some backup on that. I was hoping to get that.
So, well, there was some Miami Dolphin gear. I can't remember who got it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Somebody did get it.
I feel like there's always a nugget of truth in these stories. Like with Si, you explained it perfectly. There's a nugget of truth in these stories.
Sometimes the nugget is small.
it's very small. That's exactly right. And speaking of that, since we got Zach on here, so I want you to speak to this, Willie, because here's another one. So one time we're talking about, it was on a Christmas episode. So we're telling I was like, you know, let's tell a little bit of they want us to tell some Christmas stories. And so we're talking about, you know, Christmas memories. And so Zach, I was like, well, Zach, what about you? And he said, well, you know, we would have like our Christmas time here. It was great. And he would tell like some warm Dasher tales of Christmas in Florida. And he said, we would come over to visit the Robertsons. And then he told the harrowing tales of being mistreated,
you know, barely getting out alive without some kind of blame.
He just painted these hard tales.
He's blaming his weight gain, everything on me.
Easy. Those who live in glass houses, my friend.
Now, come on, Professor. Hey. Let's hear all your woes of mistreatment from the mean old Robertson crew.
I'll tell you this. It started with a game called Blind Man's Bluff, and all I remember was it wasn't pillows like you promised. It was jeans in a pillowcase twisted up some kind of medieval weapon that you would.
It had to be in a pillowcase. Yeah. Whatever went in there, it could have been a pillow, could have been some denim, maybe a couple of Coke cans. You know, we were trying to teach you guys who were really soft city kids how to survive, and I think we did that. You're still here.
Y'all were bullies. I spent 12 years in your armpit. I have flashbacks of that.
It was a little ritual. Hey, we made you tough.
My
look
face
at you
and
now.
Rub it in your armpit.
Look how tough you are now. So there you go.
Thank you.
But it was it took such an ugly turn because it was supposed to be a fun old family Christmas, and then it turned into tales of bullying. And it just, I don't know. It took
a turn. Well, he finally found a word. I was like, oh, maybe that's what it was. But I've heard stories of your children. Hey, they're tough kids too. So come on now.
Paid off because the 4 days ago, somebody said, well, these boys of yours are coming down there at the podcast, and Dash will be there. You know, and Willie, his boy, Jace, Al, we'll be talking it over, you know. And y'all, the order was, like it way back, you know, they need a, you know, find us an op. So we'll feed on an Opelousas cat, the king, you know, as far as eating goes. So I pulled this net up yesterday. You know, used to, took one man, now it takes two. But the current was real strong. I said, I'll know there's a God if there's the right size Opelousas cat.
The river's up real high.
River's up
high. Super low expectations.
Hard to catch them like that. The river's so, but we finally got the thing up, and I looked down in there, and there's a blue, and there's another little blue, but then there's an op, about an 8 to 9 pounder.
Perfect.
I said, there is a God in heaven because they ordered Opelousas cat, and we're sitting on it. So I got it.
Well, truth be told, Al said we're doing a podcast, and he mentioned the Opelousas. He mentioned Mac was going to be here, and I was like, man, that Opelousas cat. That's where, in fact, I had a meeting. I just brought everybody in the meeting down here, and I said, we've got to do this podcast. We've got, you know, John Luke, this is a moment. Yeah. You know, this is father, son.
I looked at that up
when
he was all skinned out and dressed and had him cut up to the right pieces. I looked at it, and it's a big that there was that he and the other blue.
Yeah,
I mean that's about an 8-9 pounder there too. So it was a lot of fish here.
Uh-huh.
We're looking at a lot of fish. I looked around. You know, nobody's there. The woman's traveling. I walked in there and I put me about 6 pieces out just to see if everything was
testing.
Rocking.
Mm. Testing.
You want to talk about good. Oh. Y'all are in.
John Luke's going to love that blue cat. He's going to love eating that.
So. You got to work your way up.
You got to work your way up to the op status.
Yeah. Well, the grandkids, they get what's left.
So I know my brother well enough to know what gets him out to the podcast, that's for sure.
But that op's waiting on us as soon as we get done with this. We'll have how many people this morning are sitting here talking about Jesus' family structure and that they eat Opelousas catfish fried fresh out of the river, caught yesterday morning, just sitting there cut up, ready to go. How many people are celebrating with that? I will bet you we're the only ones.
Probably so.
Probably so. Well, if the op's waiting, thanks, guys. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. That's all we got for today. Just a couple of witty stories. And
welcome to the shortened version of Unashamed.
No, when you say I get the blue cat, that's something that I've always thought on our mom's side, on my mom's side, on your wife, my mom's side of the family, it's always youngest kids eat first, and then you go up. But with the Robertsons, it's always oldest down to the youngest.
That's right.
So when you're
a different strategy, yeah.
Right, yeah. So when you're at the bottom of the toe bowl, like I am right now, you better believe I am.
So what do you do? What do y'all do in your family? John, like, which side did you choose for your own family? Are you going with the Robertson way of life or the Howard way of life?
No, I'm going with the Robertson way of life. I'm the oldest now. I can't switch now.
But sometimes with that side of the family's cooking, I don't mind letting everybody go on.
In fact, if they run out, it's okay. I'll go get something else.
Sometimes you let it's
okay.
It's like the food tasters of the old.
I'm just watching them how they react.
What we're gonna do this part of him? Go to the kids. Go to the kids, Ellie.
Now, sometimes just let them go back again. Just go. Just keep hammering it.
Just second, thirds.
So Willie is the.
We're not going to be able to eat all the. A 10-pound op's got a lot of meat on it.
But you know, we can try.
No, we're hey,
we're gonna.
We can try.
I'm gonna. We're gonna be telling
stories
about this.
This is all boneless catfish.
Yeah, so you got to keep in mind. The last time I ate with Willie was at Liberty at a restaurant up there. We were up there doing a screening for the movie. And Willie said, let me order the appetizers, which meant two appetizers per person. And then he ordered two entrees. He ordered two entrees. So he ate two appetizers and two full entrees himself. So I think you'll be good.
He'll eat a problem.
He'll eat all the time.
That was a just in case. I wasn't sure about the first one.
Sometimes I got a problem and I'm fixing to deal with it right now.
But I've been saving up for this one. This one will be epic. So there was no breakfast concern. There was no wasted.
You don't
want to
mess around.
The ops run in May, but this year we caught one on the first week in April. I said,
well, it was
a good sign.
We were kind of taking a shot because I knew we were early, but we had this, and we got some folks coming next week, so I asked Dad about it. But it's funny because I had a plan B. You know, I had a beef tenderloin waiting in the wings just in case. You know, it's pretty funny when beef tenderloin is
tenderloin these days are about 150
bucks. That's what I'm saying. When that's your plan B, you know you're doing pretty well, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that you can't
– no.
You just can't go get it. You can't buy it.
Oh,
you
that's
can't,
right.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's
that's right.
From our childhood, when you get that – certain op, and so yeah, that's the thing that'll get me
all for all of our listeners out there in computer land. Very few of them, you can bet, very, very few in all the other states there are. But down here in Louisiana, Opelousas catfish, as far as flavor, these the small ones, if it goes over 10, 15 pounds, nope, too big. We want the smaller ones.
A little fatty, yeah.
Yep, they're the best ones. This size we had, that one I looked down at yesterday, I said, unbelievable.
So Zach, our old friend, Steve Deese from The Blaze, has come out with a new movie called Nefarious, and it looks really interesting. Tell our audience a little bit about it.
It's about this psychiatrist that's interviewing this guy on death row to determine whether or not he's mentally insane. And not to steal the thunder of the movie, but you'll just have to watch it. I mean, it's a very intense movie. And so I would recommend that all you guys get out and watch it. It's very good.
Yeah, some people say it was kind of like they called it Interview with a Demon. And you know, from the trailer, I did see the trailer, and It had a vibe. It reminded me, there was a Denzel Washington movie that was out back in the 90s. I think it was called Fallen, where there was a demon that was kind of going from person to person, and you know, they're trying to track this thing down, and it was really intense. You know, the trailer reminded me of that. It had that kind of vibe to it, and it was really, I still remember it. It's one of my favorite movies, and so I'm really looking forward to watching this movie. Nefarious opens nationwide the weekend of April 14th. As we know from the Bible, demons are real. And I don't get any sense that they aren't any less real today than they were when we read about them, you know, in the first century. So
they're still here.
They're still here. There's no doubt about it. So this is a very relevant topic. So mark the date, April 14th. Get your tickets now at whoisnefarious.com. That is whoisnefarious.com. We're going to try to get Steve on the podcast so he can tell us a little bit about this movie and a little bit more about what went into making it. So check it out, April 14th. whoisnefarious.com. You mentioned about the movie project that you guys are working on at Liberty. Since we had Willie on, because I know you saw the movie, Willie, I wanted to talk a little bit about your perspective of the movie, what you thought about it. I know you've seen like a rough cut of it, but none of us have seen it, so I just...
Oh, you haven't? Yeah, okay.
So I'm curious about just... Because you and Corey are working on the movie project with Zach, so Zach's kind of given his perspective of it, but I was kind of wondering what you...
So you actually believe it will work?
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that? I'm curious.
As far as people want to see it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it worked, and it's there, and whether or not how many people watch it, I'm not sure. You know, sometimes you just do things and say, this is for the kingdom. This is going to be good. And, you know, whether or not it hits marks, you know, wherever that goes. But I think it's very powerful. I got pulled into a little bit of the movie and the movie making part of it. So you have to look and think about a general audience. And, you know, it was a little rough. And then we're just trying to make it to where, you know, how do you tell this story? Because even from you guys, from you and Mom and others that were around, you get different. I mean, speaking of Jay's, different perceptions of what happened and what needs to be told and how much you can fit into, you know, over an hour movie. Yeah, you know, it's just a lot to tell. And so, but I think it's very powerful. And, you know, I don't remember everything I'm watching. I'm hearing stories. I will say, John Shepherd's son, we should have brought him. We should have had another generation here. Let him run around. John Shepherd played me in the movie, which was kind of cool. So it's fun watching your grandson play you in the movie. Oh. And mm-hmm. He did great. I mean, I feel like that's how I would have acted it too.
Do you feel like he captured the essence?
I really do. Yeah. He had the hair was on point. Yeah. Uh-huh. He had,
he had super curly wavy hair, because that's how I remembered you it too.
Yeah. He kind of,
we will give you a little, this is a little sneak peek, but, the only lines that I/my grandson had, what did he say at the table?
Wait, was it asking for the Diet Coke?
I thought there was a TT man or something.
Oh, he did say TT man. Yeah.
So you hear this little faint TT man.
Like, TT man.
Is that what you call him?
That was a reference. And so we got cracked up on
did
that.
Did you train him TT to suck the two middle fingers?
No, he hadn't gotten to that stage yet. Okay. The two finger.
You remember trying to break Willie of sucking the two middle fingers, Dad? Because he did that.
How do we ever break that up?
He finally just stopped. When he went to school.
Probably when he went to school.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dad would put hot sauce on there and, you know.
Lacquer.
Yeah.
Polyurethane.
Safe methods that are in all parenting books. Still didn't work. I figured out how to rinse them off and still get them in there. And pretty much when I started school, and that was frowned upon by the other kids, and so I stopped
it. I mean, literally, he had the teeth impression on these things because he was warping his front teeth because he sucked them for so long. It's probably some kind of a cry for help.
and the stuttering problem, and all the other problems.
Bad wedding,
Bad wedding.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I sucked my thumb and went to bed.
Yeah, y'all saw the early years of leading into the building the duck calls when we were surviving off of fish either caught or you starved to death. So food was
a big issue growing up. That's why we get so excited about fish
now.
Yeah,
Professor. Yeah, you wonder why I ordered 3 meals at a
time when we didn't have anything. Old Dan was with me yesterday for the heavy lifting, you know, and he's in the boat, you know, and he said, I can't believe, how many of these did you have that y'all were running? I said, about 100 of these nets. He said, unbelievable how y'all pulled up that many nets. I did it in stages. I'd run 30, sell the fish. Next day, I'd run the 30 more, different ones, let the other ones fish. So I had it figured out where I would, every time I ran the nets, that was some I had not run yet from the week before. So that's the way we did it.
Yeah.
So, but it was a workhouse. I mean a workhouse. No wonder I got my old back, it was pretty rough now. Yeah, we're wrestling around out there with one hoop net.
Remember the days of 100 hoop net?
I said, how in the world did I run 100 of these things?
I like how Phil references Dan now as the heavy lifter. So I'm wondering if I should like be forward thinking and have me just a heavy lifter all the time. Right. I'm like, hey, heavy lifter, get over here.
Everybody needs a heavy lifter.
You know what I'm saying? I don't want to end up blowing my back out.
No, this is exactly what you need to have. Mine is called the granddaughter's boyfriend. Joey, over here.
I've got the sons and the son-in-laws, which are, especially one of them, Christian, is a heavy
Christian
lifter.
The heavy lift.
He does it just for funsies.
Yeah.
He just lifts heavy things all the time.
So Jay was talking about Christian the other day, and he said he just needs to, like, go get in competitions for a living.
I didn't know when you got about 75 or 80, crowding 80, and you look at your kids, you know, and we have a big feed at maybe Willie's house. So I'm sitting there watching the grandkids, great-grandkids, and I'm looking at them. I said, which one is that? Which one is this one? I'm like.
We joke every time. So every time there's a feed at Willie's house, so everybody that like, because we're usually involved in like, you know, bringing a side or something. Willie's a really good cook. And so now Stone works for Willie. So he usually does a big meat or two. So there's a factor because one of our old buddies is a chef. And so with Willie, you know, whatever there'll be a number. It doesn't matter, RSVP, whatever. There's a number. If they tell you a number, then you have to take that number and go half again and add to, because it's going to be that much more minimum. And sometimes you may have to even double. And so you have to factor that in, or you're not going to have enough food.
We just did it. This was a seasoned church eating group like I've never seen. Like they showed up, like I showed up today for the op. They showed up for it, and right. I mean, this is like
ready.
Imagine if the Golden Corral just said everything's free. You know, that's where they show up. And I've got a pot this big around, this tall, and there can be not, I mean, it's completely full. You could baptize somebody in this. And I'm like, that's a little overdo it. Like Zach says, I ordered appetite. Like, oh, Willie's overdone it. And at the end, I heard the ladles hitting the bottom, just trying to get every, and I was like, good night. They ate it all.
And it was such a thick chowder that like, you could only eat like you can only eat a small dish of it and you were full because it was so much of it.
There's like 10 pounds of meat.
No, that's the difference.
And I'm out there smoking sausage. I'm throwing this. just consumes.
And you wonder why more people don't celebrate with grub.
That's, you know, it's when they come from out of town and they're getting like one, they're just a little thing. They're space. When you can see their plate, you're like, yeah, they're not from around here. And then you get that local church group and it's like double it,
triple it. Yeah, the out of towners, right. They're trying to like, okay, let's get.
They're like
part of our plate full, you know, and these people are just like double handing paper plate. They're just bending, you know. They're setting them down, coming back again, you know, just hitting. I cheated. I put the small bowls. I was like, oh, this will get.
They just get two bowls.
Oh, they just, you know, they walk out with five of them. It was impressive. They ate everything we had.
It was. I told Willie, I mean, and it fed everybody, but it was like there was no going back because once that first time through, it cleaned it out.
Well, they said 70, and there was at least 120.
120. Yeah, 120. It was the time and a half. And so it's a running joke because, like, if Chef Chris comes up, and they factor it, and so they'll provide enough. They get enough extra to know that you got to go. You got to go half again, because it's just. But what happens is it's known that the food is going to be great, and so it's that's part of it too. You know you're going to eat well.
And so, well, and I made a big mistake, so I'm not eating bread right now. And so literally when I made this oatmeal, I didn't put any bread out
because
I was thinking
it, right.
I'm not, which we desperately need a bread. We
need a filler.
Just filler. I don't have any bread out.
There's a reason why when Jesus did the you know miracle, bread was a part of, because he had to get some filler in there with those fish.
And they were probably giving water to, you know, just, you know, do the bread and water, let it swell up a little bit. That was my bad. I learned a lesson.
So, Dad, you probably aren't aware of this. I don't know if when's the last time you had your liver checked? You had your liver checked lately?
Not that I know of. I've never had the liver checked.
So I did.
Too much whiskey, you may get check it out.
Too much whiskey's bad. That's one thing. But there are other bad factors I found out as well.
Was that right?
There is. It's the biggest one is what they call fatty liver. And unfortunately, the American Heart Association indicates that a lot of Americans have this. And I've noticed, Zach, that a fatty liver seems to come with a lot of fatty everything else with a person. So,
hey, you're getting too close to home there, Al.
Well, I didn't quit preaching and went to meddling, didn't I, Zach?
Yeah, easy.
So I noticed that, Zach, a little birdie told me from somewhere in North Carolina, because my liver enzymes were up, so I probably have fatty liver. And a little birdie told me that you had your liver enzymes were up as well. The last time
my liver enzymes were up, and I wouldn't say that I have fatty liver yet, but it is an epidemic. I mean, it's a major health crisis.
Here's the problem: 3.5 times more likely to have heart failure than those without. So it is
with fat on your liver.
Fat on your liver, not good for your heart.
That's why I'm not a doctor, I believe.
Well, there you go. So it says 100 million Americans have fatty liver, which puts a lot more people at risk. So we're throwing a lot of stuff at our livers, cholesterol, alcohol, as you mentioned, Dad, toxins, Tylenol, statins, cigarettes. There's a lot of bad things out there. So we want a healthy liver. So we have a new product, a sponsor for our podcast called Liver Health. And so I'm about to start taking this product. I'm excited to try it. Manufactured right here in the good old US of A, approved by American doctors. So if you're looking to ignite your fat-burning metabolism, which I am, boost your energy, transform how you look and feel, try Liver Health Formula. Receive a free bottle of blood sugar formula to reduce sugar cravings when you order today. Try Liver Health Formula by going to GetLiverHelp.com/unashamed to claim your free bonus gift. I'm about to start this myself. GetLiverHelp.com/unashamed. Give it a shot.
It is interesting, Al, that now we'll go in and feed 2, 3, 4, 5. No, not the one there. There's about 4 of us. I think this is it. We'll see. You know, you never know.
Oh, no. They'll be – Tony and Phyllis will drift Tony down. There's always a few extra. That's what I'm saying. You got to – even down here, you got to factor. There'll be a few extra. But the food is a big part of it. In fact, Lisa says now it's funny because we all have our little quibbles that y'all were talking about. We live at the restaurant. So when we go someplace, because we travel a lot, if we go someplace and be there a few days, like I have to go to the store right off the bat. Like I'm going to go to the grocery store. Lisa knows that. She doesn't, I go, because I'd rather go to the store myself. And I got to stock up. You know, it's just, but it's because we grew up, you know, we ate meals, but like, we ate everything, and I was always just a little more hungry. So now it's like I want to make sure we got food in the refrigerator, food in the pantry. And so it's just – and Lisa says that. She's like there's once we get that done, then there's like a comfort level that's there. And so I think it just goes back to that. It's like we never had – you know, Mom would always have stuff there. Now she has like pantries full of food. But it wasn't like that when we were young, because you just didn't have the money to do that. So she had food when you had the money from the selling of stuff to then have the stuff. And then she brought it home. We ate it.
We quickly.
We ate it till it was
gone. Y'all never knew the food I had in my closet. I had a whole rack.
Did you have a little stash?
Oh, I had Twinkies. I had all this stuff. When I started making money.
You confiscated it?
Well, no, I was making. He was making his fourth grade. I was making.
You bought your own food.
Yeah, I bought my own and hid it back there just for my own comfort. But we just did the same thing. We went snow skiing with our family, and there was probably 22 of us. And first stop.
You know, Willie ran away from home about. Oh,
every other week,
15, 20, 30, 40 times he had run. Where's Willie? He said, well, he got him a little thing built up, some trees up in there, some boarded up little old house back up in there.
So I was making him a spot
again. About the time dinner time came, you know, or supper, you know, here he come
again, crying for help. But
so how long would you stay gone, Willie? Would you ever do every
night? Not long, just a few, just a. I was trying to get noticed, and it apparently wasn't working. So.
The good thing was all of our areas, like different areas around the property, were always nice and clean because Willie was – he would clean the areas up, you know, for to, like, set it up for his little stays.
Yeah, I moved into a lot of different places.
He did. Those were clean for a while. So you mentioned about the your entrepreneurial businesses, which we've talked a lot about, you know, appearances and all that in podcasts. But it is interesting because there was that spirit. And I've always said that all the brothers sort of had a different connection to different parts of Dad. And I always thought that Willie had that the most with sort of that way of entrepreneurism, which is why, you know, you've done so well at running businesses and doing what you do. And John Luke, you have some of that. You've got some businesses. So I want you to tell a little bit about what you're doing with your coffee businesses and kind of what you got going on with all that. And a little bit about, I want to talk about camp today too.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are kind of the two main things right now is a coffee shop in Ruston, which has been awesome, super fun to do. And we do coffee, we roast. And so that's, you know, whole kinds of business right there. And that has been great. Taught me so much about business. And now kind of starting to work with Dad more. It's kind of starting to
We got some new
come back.
John Luke has found his way as a writer, mm-hmm. and so I'm working on this book about about preaching the gospel. And so I hired John Luke, and he has been organizing and trying to put the thoughts together. And so yeah, it's been fun working together there, and, mm-hmm. and we've actually put him on other projects with the production company that he's writing stuff. And so yeah, it's kind of fun to use his creativeness in that way as well. And so because he's such a mixture, John Luke's a mixture of Corey and I in the same way. And Corey's a reader, John Luke is them two go toe to toe. And how many books did you read last year?
58
books.
Wow, that's 56 more than I read.
Yeah. And not the little ones, you know, not like.
not the small ones. Not the pamphlets.
Yeah, not the little.
I read 52 pamphlets myself, John.
I read some tracts. But John Luke's a reader, and so he's just he's got a weird way of thinking about things. And just him being from another generation as well and growing up more with, you know, phones and computers and all that stuff. And so it's so interesting to hear that perspective of doing that,
y'all were young. There were no little black boxes.
No,
I don't know when. About when did y'all start using these daily computers?
All that's been within the last 20 years.
Yeah,
but yeah, before that, you know.
Yeah, somewhere in my 20s, I remember.
So, do you like when you read? Do you read digitally or do you read actual books?
Both. More digitally, and that's how I can read so fast. Because with the Kindle, you just click the next one and you just go.
Yeah.
And if you
actually read Kindle as well.
Yeah. And if you have the audio, you can like listen in the car and then you're back Kindle and you go back and forth.
Yeah. Which is, you're right. You can consume a lot more. So, Dad, we got exciting news. So, apparently, for a limited time, your book, Uncanceled, is available on Amazon Kindle for $2.99.
Whoa.
I mean, that's cheap.
That's a bargain now.
That's a bargain. So we've been talking about digital reading, John Luke. If you want to get it on Kindle, $2.99, uncanceled digitally.
So I've got like like 30 minutes there, 30 minutes back. So that's like, that's a lot of books.
So I'm digital free. Yeah. It's worked within the family system. The digital world is.
Well, and like he said,
I don't know whether it's good or bad. It's both,
in his case, it's great because you consume a lot more material.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen to more. You can, you know, podcasts. That's why at least people listen to a lot of podcasts. Is because
yesterday we had a discussion on What was this?
AI, which is a big deal now. You know, we talked about the pros and cons of it.
I just said, you just go with the Bible, you'll be all right.
Yeah, shocker. Dad was not a big fan of AI. It was a surprising twist that Dad.
Well, that word, what is the A stamp?
Artificial.
Oh, yeah, artificial. I said, yeah, well, there you go.
That was.
John Luke, AI is out. Out. Right. Solve that on the Unashamed.
Unashamed podcast. That wasn't a fan.
Yeah. It's out.
But it was like, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but that, and then, so working with Dad on that, and then Camp Chioka, which has been our long time family project.
So how many of you comes through there during the summertime at Camp Chioka? How many are?
I have about 1,200 kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come through 5 to 17 year olds.
That's a good thing.
And a few years ago, we started the sportsman's camp out there. And so we do that every year. And so we teach hunting skills and fishing. Right. And that's been really fun too, seeing kids come out and getting ready. Yeah. It's almost, can you believe it's almost summer?
And so much there.
So
yeah.
Where can people go to find out about coming to camp?
Oh, campchioka.com. Yeah.
It's C H Y O C A, Camp Chioka. Right.
First two layers of Christian youth camp.
My parents met there. I wouldn't be here without Camp Chioka. That's where my parents met.
Well, why you
they
know?
Met wow, at wow. camp.
And then, Zach, your mom took me to camp when I was 9 years old in 1974. She drove up. We were still, this was before Dad was a Christian. And she got me at the bar at the place from the movie and took me to camp that one summer. And, you know, just because she was working out there that year. And so, you know, I have early memories of camp, too.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated, so I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to Reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
That's where... So John Luke is fourth generation from the Howard family. His great grandfather started Camp Chioka back in the late 60s. So it's a long tradition, you know, in their family.
It's pretty cool. Like, there's a scene in the movie where his granddad, I guess great grandfather, well, your granddad plays your great grandfather who hired Kay. Whatever. So the story, it's all intertwined. And Mac, who was on the last podcast, married your granddad's sister. So it's all interrelated. But just to think about the kingdom outflow and of just that whole time period, and a lot of that revolved around Camp Chioka. Mm-hmm. A lot of it did.
Yeah. Well, and they were successful at business, which, and then that's where Kay got the job when she came to West Monroe. She worked for them. So who would have thought? And that's where Corey and I met at this same church camp. So that's where we met. And then that was my first job coming out of college. Actually, still in college. That's where I was working up until I came down to work for Duck Commander. That's where I worked. So John Luke had grown up there, run around the whole place, and just fell in love with it as well.
Yeah. It's so important to get kids just outside. And that's right. Like a summer camp is, I mean, now, especially now, sometimes that's the only time the kids are outside doing things more than a couple hours a day.
I tried to teach the young bucks mainly, you know, the art of duck calling, what just to show them, you know, what all the different sounds we're chasing, you know, and so that enlighten them, you know, to participate in a good, clean sport.
Well, and they do what all you got to do, archery, what other stuff at the sports and stuff?
We do all, we do, yeah,
everything hunting, yeah,
yeah,
all things
archery,
hunting.
And there are kids that come from all over the country, that participate,
all over,
it's for everyone,
boys and girls, come out, and it's been really fun just seeing them, like John Luke said, getting out of the
rooms, off the computers, off the cell phones, and just getting out and you know, learning stuff and walking through the woods and fishing and I'm telling you, it's as time goes on, it's people just aren't doing it.
We have a, like, every day is a different animal. So we have like fishing, turkey, ducks, deer are the four kind of main ones.
Well, and another thing that you guys have been instrumental in doing, which I want y'all to speak to a little bit, was that the camp, you guys put a lot into, because obviously this place has been out there for 60 years now. And so under y'all, mainly your family, but also other people that you've gotten to contribute and, you know, replace and, you know, restore a lot of the camp out there and rebuild a lot of new stuff, is that there's a lot of really new, great spiritual stuff that's happening out there with spiritual retreats and, you know, stuff like that. And so, I mean, it's really revitalized, I feel like, our whole community because of what's going on. And so we're having a lot of churches that are coming together doing spiritual retreats. Our church is a part of that, what you guys are doing, your church, Will, and others are participating in that. And I'm seeing just a great revival on spiritual renewal. And camp is a big part of that because it's hosting a lot of those events, you know, that where people are doing that.
Well, so. Corey's grandfather, Alton Howard, who built it initially, you know, God had blessed their business, and this was one of the things he did. And it was pretty small, you know, it kind of catered, you know, pretty much to a church. And there were some rentals. And then when I worked there, I was trying to get out in the community more. And what happened was just over time, it was hard to get, especially adults, to come out. There's no air conditioning. And we were all used to it. But it's hot.
It's, you know, Louisiana in the summer.
Yeah, so. It's really hot. And so, and Corey and I were able to bring a lot of people together, totally redo the gym. Now it's air conditioned. You can open it up and have a giant place for worship. Some of the cabins are air conditioned. And we noticed then the adults started coming out and using it more because it was more practical for adults. So, and I still love going out there all the time. I just go out there and it brings back memories of, you know, when I moved back home, and that was my first job, and that's what I had to do from all my kids growing up out there, and just somewhere to work and, you know, build stuff that other people can use, that lives will get changed. It's not just brick and mortar. It's lives are getting changed at this place. So it's for sure what we always say, it's holy ground. You know, it's a place where things can happen.
Yeah, you talk about, like, revitalizing our area, and I think that's the most important thing that Camp Shuka does. It's a neutral ground for any church, any people to come out, and with kids and adults, because, I mean, churches come together from all different, you know, whether they worship or differently, all these different things. They can meet each other, see what each other are doing, learn from each other. And then even if you're not a Christian or you're not a part of a church, it's, well, I like to do archery. I like to just be outside. I like to work on something. Mm-hmm. You know, it brings together just all kinds of different people to one space. And, you know, for us, using it as a ministry and a place that, okay, we can come here, we can show people love, we can teach them about God and creation and everything.
Now, and that's what we talk about along this podcast, is trying to talk about kingdom building, you know, and I think camp has done that in a powerful way. And you kind of can avoid then the traditional traps you get into sometimes with just make it church related, and you make it kingdom related, and that helps everybody. And so I love that. That's been so good. But in that, you help churches because you make everybody stronger.
Right.
And when we have those retreat Sundays now where other churches will come in, it's so uplifting, you know, for everybody. And they've been out there at camp, and they've had this great experience on a weekend. And so even the people that didn't participate there still get that energy, you know, that comes from all those changed lives. So it's just great kingdom building and stuff, which I love it. And to see that carry on. So, but John Luke, you went to school. That's what you got your degree in, right? At Liberty is how to do stuff like that, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what you learned.
How to run a summer camp. That was my whole degree.
Right. Which was
camp,
a good thing.
Yeah, which was awesome. Camp Outdoor Adventure Leadership, which was really all just leadership, all how to run a team, how to get people to come together and work on one specific project. In a Christ-centered way, you know, because there's a lot of different ways to do that. And that, it's interesting, you know, whether it's Camp Shuka with the counselors there, whether it's at Duck Commander or at Railway, the coffee shop, it's people are just people, you know. You lead them the same way, you love them the same way, you serve them the same way. They come together over the same things. It's cool to see.
Yeah, and you bring the kingdom work in with the vocation, and I thought Phil was always great at that. Is you're not defined by your vocation. It's not the Duck Cause, not Duck Dynasty. It's that faith, where that faith just is constantly, you know, merging in with that. And so you can use that in different ways. And this year for us is a big year for our family because we've got so many projects going that are work, but they're also kingdom minded. We've got the movie obviously coming out that we're excited about in September.
How old are you, Jean-Luc?
27.
So
that's right.
When I started traveling around, it was 28. I was traveling around, you know, and just demonstrating duck calls, how to get ducks into your decoys and all that. But then I thought one day I had a big crowd there. I said, I think let me try something here. And I put my duck calls up. I said, well, that concludes the duck hunting. I said, now let's talk about these matters. So I brought my Bible out. You know, it's like you shot over their head, you know, boom, scared. So I preached the first gospel sermon on top of the duck call demonstration just to see what would happen.
I remember it well.
I was amazed that five different preachers of various denominations walked up there after that and said, would you come down here and do that here? Well, today, you younger bucks, Willie, he's out there speaking to this group. You speak to the group. You're doing the same thing, you know. So.
And that was about the same age that I came down to work for Duck Commander.
Yep.
It was about that late 20s. Yep.
Training reached way down in there, you know, and now that's what we're known for because that's what we are.
But, you know, it just struck me. I didn't realize it was the same age that when you came to Christ, which is kind of the culmination of the movie, so you created – or God created in you, this compound mentality right over here,
yep,
a mile away with Granny and Paul.
Yep.
And them living in one house and us in the other one and starting the business. And now 50 years later, we're all in the compound up the road. We all live right there in proximity. We're all in business together. We're doing ministry together, you know, and now you're doing it three generations removed from you.
And the line
of people, that's pretty
amazing. If you could see the line now, if you just did it by cars and vehicles that come down there to where there are no more roads, you're on the river, there's been a constant stream of them for 50 years. There's no telling how many we've baptized in the river, you know. Oh, yeah. A lot of them, you know, they said, are there any alligators out there? I said, yeah, we got most of them. You'll be all right.
Well, I got to tell you about this other project that Corey and I are working on, and it's called His Story, the Musical, and it's going to launch in mid-May in Dallas or Grandscape area, and it is, now Phil's going to love this, it's a Broadway musical about the life of Jesus. It was the craziest story. It was written by a 17-year-old girl, and Corey and I became aware of it, jumped into it, and so we're helping produce this. But we bought a tent, and the whole thing's going to be in a tent. But I'm talking about an air-conditioned, nice tent, but it looks like the carnival tent. But it's giant, and so we're putting it up now, and so we're getting excited. We were trying to have it by Easter, but we couldn't quite make that. But, yeah, it's going to be this Broadway play that's going to play out. It's going to run, you know, every week, multiple times, and
well,
it's just
great.
A different way of showing the gospel. And it was actually when I was writing this book about how to share the gospel and listening to y'all talking Mac earlier, there were so many points that y'all were saying. I was like, that's in the book.
I could see y'all talking over there.
I kept looking around going, I can't believe that they're saying they're the one with the whale. I mean, all those stories are in there. But then I was writing, and I kind of hit this block and I just, for a couple of weeks, and the chapter was actually on the gospel. And I would start writing, and then I was, it sounds too preacher. Yeah, it sounds too religious. It sounds, you know, and I was trying to get it down to like I was just telling somebody. And that's when I was exposed to this musical about Jesus. And it was almost like I heard something say, there's different ways to get the gospel out. It's not just the, you know,
it's a great idea.
The traditional way. There's other people that can act and sing and get the gospel out. And so, man, we put this thing together fast, and it's going to be a huge project. And yeah, I can't wait to opening night. And so it's happening right now. And so now I'm back and forth into Dallas in that area. So if you're in the Dallas area, check out His Story, the Musical. Tickets are on sale.
Is there like a website or where can people?
Well, it's His Story, the Musical. Yeah, you can find it there. Okay. Sadly, I don't have all the exacts, but I know if you type that in.
It's hisstorythemusical.com.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Hisstorythemusical.com, and you can get tickets right there on the website.
Yeah, and the girl who wrote it was a missionary. And
a 17-year-old girl.
17-year-old, never written anything, never written musicals, music.
Amazing.
She saw Hamilton, and she said she heard a voice say, "Won't you write something about Jesus that people can learn more about that?" And sat down and wrote the whole thing.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. It's great. The story of just how it all came together and even how I was reached out to, it's just incredible to be involved with it. And so Corey and I jumped in. We've got a lot of friends on board and funded the whole thing. And just, I think it could be a really powerful thing, especially where we're at in the country where it looks to me like people are just starving, you know,
they
the
are.
Things we see at the college campuses and, you know, the Jesus Revolution movie. It's like people are hungry for that, for something opposite than what they're seeing in the world, you know.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. Well, I want to get your take because we don't have much time left. Of course, we got a little bit of overtime, but it feels like that there is this thirst and hunger, and even in culturally, mm-hmm. you know, for something spiritual, for something more. And obviously there's this, you know, somebody mentioned that there's this kind of the Romans 5 idea that, you know, there, while sin is seems to be increased, there's so much bad that grace seems to be rising to the occasion because you see the success of Jesus Revolution and some of the things. And we were mentioned on the last podcast that I saw that Gibson is about to come out next year with a sequel to The Passion, you know, which I know he's been working on, which I'm sure will be amazing if it's anything like that.
By the way, Al, it is, with in lieu of what Willie just said, working with that group. It is a spiritual fix, not a governmental one.
Oh, I agree.
No doubt about it.
So, how do you see that us kind of going in? I mean, do you sense that too? And what do we need to do more of? How do people react to that?
I get the sense that God's on the move because I think you may would think, oh, well, now it must have, you know, because of the success or something, that's maybe why. But many of these projects, the stuff we're talking about and all these projects happened years ago.
Right.
And it's odd that they're all, you know, it's coming out when the thing that happened at the colleges wasn't planned. It just happened.
They're random.
And so you could feel this because, I mean, there's certainly darkness. We can all see it and feel this darkness. And so, but the light, you know, the light is going to come through. And so, and I think maybe some more traditional methods, you know, is not, you know, through church or whatever, you know, they feel like, right. Well, I feel like there needs to be something more than just trying to show up Sunday morning, you know, and sit there. You know, it's like they want to be more active.
Inorganic.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the book of Acts, it's active, you know, it's not.
Well, and because moving. I felt like the college campus, especially, and John, look, you're a lot closer to the age group than we all are, but the alternative to kind of what's been out there, especially like the woke stuff, it just always seems so angry and negative. It's just not very appealing if I were a young person. I mean, I know that's a lot of people are swept up into that, but this seems so much more pleasant. I mean, watching these people worshiping and I mean, just watching I'm just watching it like everybody else. And I mean, I don't know if I were a young person, I would be drawn to that. I mean, it's more than the other, you know what I'm saying? Maybe it's that, I don't know.
You know what I get the sense of, and I feel May can speak to this even, but here's what I kind of feel. It's like at some point everybody was fighting the system, but what happens when you become the system?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then you're trying to find something to fight against, but it's like you are the system now.
You're in
all
now.
The things that you were, which may be godliness or the church or, you know, government, you know, stuff that we used to, you were fighting what you thought was kind of good and you were kind of on that edge.
Right.
But it's odd to me when the system becomes that and then you watch these people look around, who exactly are they fighting? You know, in many ways, the governments are doing exactly what you know what you want them to do, and so
now
the
edgy, that's what I kind of edgy sense. Is to be something
you know what I'm
totally
saying?
Different. Yeah, yeah. So
we're edgy now yeah, goes Mark, the Mark, other way. You know.
Yeah, Mark Sayers said, if you want to be disruptive, be a non-anxious presence. He said that's what's disruptive now. It's just to be a non-anxious presence. Yeah. You know, not a presence and not, it's not out, I mean, the outrage culture. And I mean, I've bought into it myself, you know, but it is exhausting. I mean, my gosh, it's like, surely there's something more beatific that we can be called to. I think people are more attracted to beauty, and there's a time to call out stuff. I'm not saying there's not, but I mean, I feel like we got enough of that. Like we got a lot of prophets right now on social media, and it's just exhausting. You know what I mean? I think that's why these stories and what we're doing is so appealing and life-giving, because it's telling the story. It's telling stories that are telling the story of Jesus and of redemption and hope and purpose and meaning and all of that, you know?
Yeah, it's much more.
It's powerful.
Well, I have a line and the question's still there. After it all, the smoke clears. Who has the best story?
I like her story.
And I do want to get this line in now, that because this book I'm writing is, it talks about how we need to be talking about the good news. And I think a lot of Christians have fallen in this little slot of they're just going to be the bearers of bad news. And they're just constantly telling you how bad the world is. And at some point I'm going, I get it. Where's the hope? Where's the good news? Do you have anything good? Rather than just saying, this world's going to hell in a handbasket. And that may be true, but where's the good news? Where's the hope? Where do we
get something good? I want to hear a little bit more about your book in overtime. So if you want to follow us over for a few more minutes, blazetv.com/unashamed to hear from Willie and John Luke. Without Jace here, we're hearing so much more from him. So we'll do that in our overtime segment. Follow us over.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.